Excellent. Well, as a naive American, if I had to pick three races to do in Europe, not including UTMB, because I've heard of UTMB.
Yeah.
What do you think I should be doing for 2020?
One question.
Yes.
Do you have any training secrets? Like, do you have any key workouts that only Chris Mocco does?
I don't know how unique this is, and probably because most people are probably afraid to share on Strava when they do this, but...
Hello, this is another one. Another one, baby. Welcome to Now Is It Alvor with Hans Christian and friends. We're going to be the best podcast that you ever did here, and we're going to thrill you. We're going to teach you. We're going to entertain you. Like Britney Spears once said, there are those of us who observe and those of us who are here to entertain. And we're here to entertain you, bitch.
Podcast land, welcome to this English special edition of what normally is a Scandinavian podcast. This is a Norwegian podcast. It's mostly about running, mountain running, trail, ultra, all that kind of stuff. And today is no exception, but I'm gonna do this whole thing in English, so hopefully I will attract some international audience in this episode. And the reason I'm doing it in English is because today's guest is none other than internet personality and badass ultra runner, Chris Mocco. Maybe you've heard of Chris Mocco. Maybe you've seen his YouTube channel. It's called The Mocco Show. I'll leave a link in the show notes. In the show description notes, so check him out on YouTube. He's currently training for Western States. It's in exactly 2 weeks, 14 days actually. Today I'm recording this on Saturday 15th, and Western States is June 29th. So in 2 weeks he'll be towing the line at Western States together with two of my friends, Thomas Ødru and Halvard Sjølberg from Norway. So I'm really excited to see how my Norwegian friends do, and let's see if Chris can get a better position than his personal best, which is 7th place. That's what he achieved in 2016. And in 2017 he had some issues, and I think he finished 58th, and this year he's back. So let's hope for the best. I think he's in shape. All right. If you're new to this podcast, my name is Hans Christian Smedsrud. I'm an ultra runner. I'm an elite sky runner, and this podcast is my income. It's my main income as a runner. I quit my job just like Chris has, and this is kind of a experiment I'm doing. I quit my job and I'm gonna travel around Europe in July, and I actually don't have anything to return to. I'm renting out my apartment, and I'm just gonna be this podcasting running bum until I return, and I don't know when I will return. So just a heads up, if you want me to visit you around the Alps or northern Italy, Slovenia, Austria, France, the whole Chamonix area, the Pyrenees, whatever, I have a Interrail ticket, which means I can travel where I want, when I want, with bus and train, or at least by train. So if you want me to visit you, document your training ground and mountains with this podcast, and you want a really good training partner and someone that can cook. Hit me up. My name is Hans Christian. You can find me on social media as Hanserino. So that's it for me. Thank you to all my Patreons who support me. That's actually how I make a living out of this podcast. So thank you to all of my Patreons. Yeah, that's it. I'll leave you to my chat with Chris Mako. Chris Mako. All right. Bye. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, this interview was done on Skype or a video conferencing software, and I recorded the whole session, and I will be releasing this whole thing on YouTube. So check out my YouTube channel. I'll put a link in the description. Okay, back to the show.
This is why I'm on this podcast. I checked my YouTube analytics. I think Norway is about 18th or 19th in terms of viewership. So we need to pump up those numbers, baby.
Yeah.
get into the high double digits.
So I wanted to talk to you because I feel like we are kind of the same person. We live in a parallel universe, kind of. We're almost the same age. I'm 30, you're 33, right? Yeah. We both quit our jobs in tech. And we're both running full-time now. And yeah, I guess that's pretty much it. We both create content online. We produce a lot of stuff in social media. So I think we have a lot to talk about. And the first time I heard about you, I think I was on a bus. I was in a conference at Google in San Francisco, and I was finished with the conference. I was on a bus from what's it called? Mountain View, yeah. Over to Marin. So I was on the bridge, and I was listening to the podcast called Ultra Runner Podcast, and you were on it. I think it was 2017 or something, and you were talking about, I mean, you just talked about you live in Marin, and I was like, I'm on my way to Marin, and you said, I just won a race. I have tons of red wine, so if anyone want to come over and drink some red wine, hit me up on social media, and that's just what I did. And you did not have the opportunity to meet me right then, but I got to know your local trails. You don't live in Marin right now. You live in Boulder, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I moved to Colorado just under 2 years ago.
Mm. So tell me a little bit more about your background, Chris. Where do you come from? Did you grow up in Marin or?
No, my journey began on the East Coast. I grew up in Virginia, outside of DC, and spent my childhood there. Moved to California for college. Went to Stanford University, just a couple miles from the Google campus.
Mm.
And then stuck around the area for the next decade or so, bouncing from Palo Alto to San Francisco. And then at the very tail end of it, spent about 6 months living and training in Marin full time. So not actually that many moves, but definitely different lifestyles. I typically try to find affluent communities with low diversity. I think San Francisco might have been the only exception, but, you know, Palo Alto, Marin, Boulder, the Northern Virginia area where I grew up, not a lot of diversity going on there. It's a lot of upper middle class white people.
Oh yeah.
And it's not by choice that I have I've chosen those places. I haven't chosen those places for that reason, but I guess the mountains and beautiful nature attracts a certain ilk of people, adventurers, and that's kind of how I ended up here.
Yeah. So during college, what did you study?
Studied something that it's not a very traditional major. It's called management science and engineering, which is a mix of business and engineering. I minored in computer science, but it was really about understanding how entrepreneurship works. And being in Silicon Valley, that was critical for understanding the sort of jobs and the industry that I wanted to enter. So it was practical for what I was doing, but certainly far from a traditional major that you'd see at every American university.
Okay. So you ended up taking a job in tech, right?
Yeah, after college. I started with a very traditional job at Intuit.
Intuit? They're kind of
famous for TurboTax and Quicken and QuickBooks, so both accounting and tax software, and kind of found my roots in product management there, took that and found a job at Square, which is a mobile payments company, credit card processing, and point of sale, small business, et cetera, et cetera, it continued to grow, and spent 5.5 years working there, at which point I was just a little burnt out by the tech industry, the work, the city, and had found some success on the trails, but knew that in order to, what I believed at the time was that in order to be successful at trail running, I needed to invest more time in it and give myself a real opportunity to see my potential. And so I dedicated the next several months to training full time for Western States in 2017.
Okay. So that's when you quit your job to, okay. So to commit to Western States.
And I was just, I had just turned 31 at the time. So just a little bit older than you.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did that go? Quitting your job? I mean, what you ended up having a lot of time, right?
Yeah,
what did you use? How did you spend that time?
Well, it turns out when you're training upwards of 3 hours a day, and you add in all the stretching, pre-warm-up stuff, it takes up a pretty good chunk of the day. I mean, breakfast alone and getting your coffee in probably took 2 hours. You go for a three-hour run, all of a sudden it's 2 or 3 in the afternoon. You get in a quick nap and it's dinner time. And so the time went by quickly when I was training at a high level. Where I really struggled was when I was either tapering or I was in between racing and I had a lot of free time on my hand and I didn't really know what to do with that free time. So that was the hardest thing for me, was struggling to feel like I was a productive human being during that time. And I had been working at such a intense level for such a long time that, you know, type A personality, need to always be doing something. And even when it was just running and that was taking up a lot of time, that it felt like something was missing. And as such, combination of some disappointing races, a little bit of burnout from the running, I decided to return to tech and spend another year working at Twitter, but did so in Boulder. So just a little bit different environment than San Francisco.
Okay. Did you take the job purposely in Boulder, or did you want to go to Boulder?
I moved first and then I found the job.
Okay. Okay. And why did you want to go to Boulder? What did you leave?
Boulder checked a lot of the boxes for me. I really liked Marin, but the one thing that where Marin struggled was that didn't really have much of a social scene for someone in their, a single male in their like 30s. It's mostly families. I thought Boulder would have a little bit more going on. It's a college town. And it turns out that it's probably not actually that much better, because it's a lot of young kids who are in college or finishing up college. And then a lot of folks move to Denver or outside of Boulder, because Boulder is actually a pretty expensive city to live in.
Okay.
And they don't come back until they have families of their own. So I'm still in this kind of awkward in between, but it also attracts quite a significant number of folks who are either semi-professional or professional athletes, because it's such a good place to train. You're at altitude, access to trails, access to flat stuff if you need to be running flat, great dirt roads for road marathoners. So there's a lot of folks in a similar position to me, and I've been able to kind of connect with them. And it's not something that was available in Marin. Some of the other places I looked at had other issues like accessibility to an airport, jobs, etc. And Boulder kind of has a really good mix of all that.
Do you train a lot alone, or do you do workouts with other people?
I've considered joining training groups. It's very difficult to find a training group for trail running. A lot of folks have coaches, a lot of those coaches do not prescribe the same workouts. There's a lot of marathon training groups where there's 10 to 20 athletes doing the exact same training. I don't think the same thing exists in trail running. What the guys are doing in Flagstaff, Arizona is probably the closest we have, where there's five or six guys who do some long runs and some training runs together. But even those guys don't train on a everyday basis, I don't think. So I think because it's such a unique sport, people want to focus on different areas, either improve on their strengths or work on their weaknesses. There's some significant gaps in your running abilities. And so like my Nike teammate, Matt Daniels, he's a very good climber. I'm a terrible climber. So when we go for a run, I'm struggling on every climb. He's kind of held back. And then on descents, maybe I'm able to keep up, but I feel this guilt when I'm slowing somebody down. And syncing up on days when you're both running the same pace is never that easy. But it does make a massive difference when you do have somebody else to run with, just to have the miles go by a little faster.
Mm. And do you work on your weaknesses? Like you said,
not as much as I should. I'm pretty aware that I'm still not very good at climbing. I should be spending a lot more time doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that.
And when you say climbing, it's obviously running uphill, just to make things clear to the listener.
I'm not rock climbing. Even really thinking as much about really steep sections where you'd be power hiking. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about like finding an efficient pace on climbs. And I have my own efficient pace, but it typically is slower than the folks around me. Does that mean other people are working harder during the race too early? Maybe. Am I being too conservative and worried about pacing and saving my energy? I really don't know. It seems to be working out okay for me. But at the end of the day, sure, I can be spending more time on hills, but the most important factor for flat running and for a big component of the uphills is your just overall aerobic fitness. So I find if I have a choice between doing something hard on a hill or doing something flat and fast, I'll probably opt to the flat and fast, just because that's something I'm more comfortable with. I know how to push myself a little bit harder, and it tends to provide most of the same benefits, although it's certainly not a replacement for a big climb effort.
Mm. And now you're training for Western States again, right?
Yep.
And what are you focusing on right now? How did it go last time, and what's different now?
What is the date today? June 12th. We are 17 days away from the race. So I'm doing everything possible not to sabotage myself at this point. There's not a lot of fitness gains I'm going to get in the next 17 days, but I can certainly screw up from a mental standpoint if I don't sleep well, don't eat well, try to run too much, try to do too little. Like there's a fine line where I need to continue to put in some effort and make sure my body still feels in tune, well greased, ready to go. But I also need to start conserving some of that energy so I'm ready on race day. I'm going to hopefully incorporate some sauna training in the next couple of days, because a big thing at States is the temperature, where it can be, I apologize, I don't know the Celsius, but it can be over 100 degrees for a good part of the race.
That's about 40 degrees Celsius.
It's toasty. So doing things to get acclimated to the heat is also important. And then figuring out what I'm going to do on race day, what I'm going to have packed. The last two times I did this, I was driving to the race, so it's just a little bit easier because you can kind of throw in everything into a car.
Mm.
But you have to be a little bit more intentional when you're flying. So making sure that I have exactly what I need for race day and not having to stress about that in the day or two leading up to it is certainly something I need to figure out now.
Okay. And how did it go last time? Just to do a recap.
I'm going to apologize. So I knew we were podcasting today, so I prepared a very quiet breakfast.
That's all right. Yeah. What are you eating?
It is a kind of a disgusting blend of, I just wanted as much protein as possible. So it's just some Greek yogurt, cinnamon, a little bit of protein powder, because I really like this chocolate protein powder, and some applesauce. So it's just every quiet thing I could find in my fridge.
Yeah, that sounds like my diet. Yeah, everything I have.
And I was also on a bit of a budget, so a time crunch, so wasn't time for pancakes, I was for sure.
Yeah, we're going to talk about pancakes.
You were asking about performance Western States in my previous go. So
yeah.
I've done it twice before.
You've done it twice. Okay, yeah.
I was in 2016. I was very new to the sport. Mm-hmm. I had just begun running ultras a couple months prior. Was lucky to get a golden ticket, which means I finished top two at one of a couple of races. Mm. To get my entry into Western States, showed up probably undertrained. I was working full time. There were some stresses not that far away from race day that kind of got to me. I had to fly to Japan for work, and
okay.
That was a lot to handle.
Yeah,
but showed up in a decent place, had a fairly good day, had a lot of lows early in the race, but found a way to compete in the second half and kind of flirted with 12th to 7th place for the last 30 miles or so, and kind of went back and forth with a bunch of athletes. And as painful it is to race like that, where you're close to a lot of other runners, it is incredibly motivating and distracting to have competition. And when you're out alone and you don't see anyone all day, it can be frustrating and tiresome to mentally stay focused that whole time. But there was always people around me, and there was this urgency to keep going and push myself. And I was lucky to kind of finish at the front of that group. So I finished 7th that year. Top 10 is kind of the target for any elite athlete, because yeah, that ensures you get an entry to the next year. There's a little bit of prestige with that. So that was a really good start. In 2017, I certainly had a lot more pressure on myself. I'd been training at a much higher level. I had been racing much better than prior years. There were certainly expectations, probably externally as well, not only from a press and media standpoint, where I was never getting interviewed before. I had begun my YouTube channel, but I also had just signed a contract with Nike. And so while they certainly weren't saying, hey, you need to finish in this place,
sure,
I was putting pressure on myself to start this relationship on a good foot. So showed up on race day, executed my plan pretty well for the first half, but then something happened in the last, at like mile 30, 65, that I to this day don't really know what happened, but I just couldn't run anymore. And I had to walk the final 35 miles, and went from 4th place all the way back to like 58th, but I finished. Mm-hmm. I finished under 24 hours still. So certainly not the day I was looking for, but a incredible mental effort for me to get through that day. And now we find myself 2018. I was actually unable to even qualify. I just wasn't in a really good state with work and moving and all of that, and wasn't able to get into consistent good training rhythm, and unfortunately could not qualify. Finally kind of got my act together at the end of 2018, raced really well at the start of 2019, got my golden ticket again, and now find myself just less than three weeks out from race day feeling maybe not quite as fit as I did in 2017, but certainly on the upward trajectory, where I feel like there's momentum behind my training. I'm getting fitter every week, as opposed to 2017, where I was really starting to crest that fitness peak and start heading in the opposite direction. So I'm definitely in a very good mental and physical state right now. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to do something really good at States, but I do think that the most important element for these long races is not racing the field, but racing yourself and really tuning out what's going on around you, trying to run as close to your potential as possible, and then wake up in the last 20 miles and try to race people to the finish at that point. So if I'm able to do that, I'd love to see another top 10 finish, but certainly would like to move up a little bit on the podium as well.
Boulder is in altitude, right?
Yeah, we're about, I live at about 5,200 feet, so.
Okay.
Under probably 1,700 meters, 1,500 meters.
Yeah, yeah. How do you think that will affect your shape on race day in Western States compared to last time? Because last time you didn't live in altitude.
Yeah, I've always struggled at altitude. So my biggest fear the first 2 years at Western States was that I wasn't going to be able to handle the altitude. The race starts in Squaw Valley, which is at about 6,500 feet, which is even higher than Boulder. Mm. You immediately climb to over 8,000 and then spend the next 30 plus miles at decent elevation. I don't think you drop below 4,000 until mile 60. So it's a lot of time at thinner air, and that was always a concern for me. It never played out to be as big of a factor as I thought it would, but I'm anticipating and hoping that because I've been training at a higher elevation, that it'll just make everything a little bit easier. And I'm certainly not as stressed about how my body's going to adapt when I arrive in Squaw, because I'm pretty familiar with the drier climate, the thinner air, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
And this winter, you trained a lot for marathon running, flat road racing. Why did you do that? Can you explain why you incorporated fast asphalt running into your ultra running lifestyle?
Yeah, I mean, if I had my druthers, if I had my preference, I would be running on the trails full time throughout the year. Unfortunately, Boulder has pretty nasty winters, which make the trails a little bit less accessible.
Sounds like Norway.
Yeah, people are trail champions and get out there with their micro spikes and get through it, but it's just not something that appeals to me. So mostly for my sanity, I chose to focus on roads, stay flat, because while the mountains remain snowy and icy for most of the winter, the roads actually stay fairly clear, which is nice. And I was able to put in a pretty good training block just working on my top end speed and my endurance, which I knew would benefit me in the long run when it came to trail running. Mm. Unfortunately, my goal race, I was hoping to have a pretty massive personal best, but the field didn't end up being quite as strong as I hoped. Wasn't pushed and kind of ran by myself the entire race. I won it, so that was a good way to end that cycle, but it wasn't quite as fast as I thought I was capable of, and was also pretty burned out from that training. So basically from the end of March through most of April, I didn't do much structured training and really didn't start until early May. Okay. And for somebody approaching a 100-miler and in less than 2 months, that was a little scary. But now looking back at it, it was exactly what I needed to do, because if I had attempted a 12, 16-week cycle focused solely on Western States, I would have been equally burnt out. I can't train at that intensity that I believe is necessary for these races for much longer than that period of time. My body doesn't necessarily break, but my mind starts to break a little bit, and having just 6 to 8 weeks to focus has been pretty key to my success and how I'm feeling right now.
And you hired a coach for that period, right? Do you still have a coach?
I hired my high school teammate, who was a professional runner and incredibly fast athlete himself. He, until 2 or 3 weeks ago, he held the 25K American record, numerous U.S. road national championships. So just a really accomplished runner. He also knows how to push his athletes in a way that very few coaches can do. And because I've known him for more than half of my life, he understands me pretty well. He coached me while I was working full-time as well. And I think the expectations from him were a bit high, where he'd be wanting me to run 16 to 18 miles before work on a weekday. And that's just not really sustainable. But I thought that with my full-time commitment to running that it would be easier. And it certainly was, but some of those workouts were so mentally tough to even begin that it became pretty arduous by the end. I had a ton of anxiety before every workout. And so after that ended, I knew I wanted a break, but I also think for my sanity, given that I'm going to be doing trail running for now the next 3 to 6 months, that I need to make sure it's more sustainable. And I'm coaching myself and doing a training program that is about as unstructured as possible, where I have a rough idea of, okay, I kind of wrote down like this week I want to do, actually the only thing I wrote down on my planner for when I was looking out in the build up of States was, this is how much miles I want to do during my long run. And I probably have hit those accurately half of the time. Sometimes I've gone longer. Most of the time I've gone a little bit less. And I really just haven't put much pressure on myself to do specific workouts and really go off of feel. And if I'm out there having a great day, go for it. If I'm feeling tired, mentally not in it, take it a bit easier. And without that pressure, it's been just a little bit easier to get through the cycle. I still think about my mileage and trying to hit numbers and hit vertical gain every week. And that's not a great mindset to be in. It's kind of exhausting to try to chase these numbers, but the more I've stepped away from that and realized like, hey, you know, instead of forcing 12 miles today, maybe go 6 miles and really let your body recover mentally and physically, has turned out to work out pretty well for me when the next day I suddenly have a little bit more pop and energy to do something a bit better than I would have otherwise.
Mm. So do you use Strava actively? I mean, you have an account and you post stuff, but how much do you look at the stats and focus on that when you're out running and segments? And do you think about that?
I the main purpose for Strava for me is as a recording of my efforts. Yeah. I've maintained a running journal since I was in high school.
Where you actually write down? Do you write more than stats, or do you write the thoughts you have during the run and more like?
I got pretty in depth, but ever since Strava existed, I've pretty much eliminated any manual entry of that and just rely on that to track my mileage and efforts. And to be honest, I think it's plenty. I don't think I've ever looked back other than looking at races to see how races have played out. You always think that you're going to look back and see what your old workouts were and what paces you were hitting, but I never do. So it's the historical information is nice to have just in case I ever wanted to. But for the most part, it's really just about knowing where I am in the week and how much distance I've covered.
Mm. Do you want to talk a little bit about sponsorships? You mentioned you were a Nike athlete, and we almost talked about pancakes. You were pretty active on trying to get Costco as a sponsor on YouTube. Can you elaborate on how you sell yourself on social media as an athlete? And yeah.
Speaking of which,
Martin or?
I've actually started working with Martin as well. In just for about a month or two now. And, every single elite marathoner that I can think of seems to be using their product now.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I wanted to give it a try, and it certainly hasn't disappointed. I don't know if the intended audience for their drink mix was ultra running, but they have 160 calorie mix and the 320, and the 320, like 320 calories in a single drink, is pretty awesome for ultra runners.
Yeah.
Like I feel like if anything, ultra runners have a hard time getting in calories, especially later in the race. And I mean, you don't even really notice it when it's in your bottle. It tastes fine, goes easy on the stomach, but I think that in general, the hard thing with sponsorships is proving to these brands that you can provide value.
Mm.
And the other hard part is that I don't think very many athletes most athletes rather undervalue themselves. So when it comes to contract negotiations with shoe brands, which is kind of where you start, almost always I feel like athletes are probably undervaluing themselves. And instead of asking for money, they're, you know, just getting free product. Same goes for most other relationships where the expectations for some of these brands about how many social media posts you're doing and how much you're talking about the products is pretty high. Mm. But in exchange, you're just getting some free product or just a discount on their product. So I think the most important thing is, one, encourage athletes to make sure that you realize that you can provide value, figure out what that value is and if there's a way to measure it. And then when you talk to these brands, don't sell yourself short. Like I think people are very eager to get free things, but if you're getting $100 of free products, but then the requirements for social media are very high and you have to kind of change from an authentic personality to something that isn't authentic because you need to have a photo of your product 4 times a week, then I'd probably shy away from a relationship like that and just focus on relationships where not only you feel like you're providing value for the brand, but they in turn are also providing value to you. And obviously financial support is a big part, but I think for most athletes, the most important thing is the marketing aspect. And is the brand willing to promote this athlete, use them in their marketing materials, you know, say nice things about them when things go well and things don't go well. And brands that really want to have this symbiotic relationship build up their athletes is really where I try to stay focused and I'm most attracted to. And I just don't have the patience or time for other things. So that's kind of my stance there. I think there's a very few folks in our sport who are in a position where they're talking to agents and actually having somebody negotiate on their behalf. And
especially trail.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the value of an agent is probably a little bit higher in road and track because they're also able to work with meet directors and get their athletes into races, which is not quite as big of an issue in our sport. Most of the race directors are so welcoming and accommodating and excited to have athletes that most of us can just reach out to them. But I do think there's going to be an inflection point where all of a sudden agents are going to become more important in the trail running community to really push the limits of where the funding comes from. When you think about a Jim Walmsley, I really don't have much insight into how much he's making exactly, especially don't know anything about what Killian's making, but I have to imagine it's orders, at least an order of magnitude less than the top track athletes. And for the amount of exposure that they have and the amount of attention they get in our sport, it just doesn't seem right that's the case, especially when we're suffering for so much longer. So, yeah. 100 meter runner is running for less than 10 seconds. Feels totally unfair.
So who's your ideal sponsor if you could choose?
Whew. Well, I think I look at when I'm at the start line of a race, I look at what I'm wearing and kind of can identify key parts of my outfit. Cause I think first and foremost, most important thing is things that I'm wearing in a race, people are going to notice and maybe be convinced to purchase because they see that I'm using these products. I think there's a big issue in our sport where athletes are attracted to the most money and they're running in shoes that may not work for them, running in gear that doesn't work for them. But I was fortunate that I found a relationship with a company that I love their product and I think make world-class shoes, gear, clothing. And so that's been great with Nike, but it also means that a lot of what I'm wearing is already covered by one brand, everything from hat, eye gear, singlet, shoes, shorts, everything taken care of there, socks. We're just about to get the train coming through here, so it's going to get a little noisy. So be warned.
That's all right. That's all right.
So
how often does the train go by? Every hour?
I'd say it averages about every 2 hours. but there is a brewery about 200 meters across the train tracks. where within 15 minutes after the train, you can get a beer for $2.50. So
really,
the fact that I live this close, I technically could walk across the tracks and get a beer on discount whenever I wanted to, because I'm in such close proximity, but have actually not done that nearly as much as I should be doing.
Do you drink beer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I am attempting something that I have never done before in a race since college, but I am having a dry month.
Okay.
So no alcohol right now. And, it's less about changing how my body feels and thinking that beer is bad for you, and more of just about, showing some discipline in this final month, because, sure. I think that's important to do, and something that I lose focus occasionally in the last couple of weeks of training. And that's probably where it's most important to be as dialed in as possible. Mm. So back to brands though. So
yeah.
One, take care of yourself on shoes and clothes. I found Nike, so I'm taking care of there. I think watch is very important. I don't work with any watch companies. I'd love to. I am approaching UTMB for the first time, so that introduces hiking poles and headlamps. There's another opportunity. And then the final one is probably nutrition, where having a strong partner for hydration and fueling, it becomes critical. And I really haven't, well, I'm working with Martin right now, and I don't even know how to pronounce their name. Is it Morten? Martin?
It's Swedish. So I think it's, we say Morten.
Okay.
Morten. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
I heard some people say Martin.
Yeah. But that's kind of like an ongoing conversation to find one that works perfectly, because while they do have strengths in what they do offer, there are other companies that offer a more holistic suite of products, from recovery to pre-race hydration, et cetera. So, I think that's probably going to be one of the more important ones to nail down in the next 6 months. But it's also hard because you don't often see what nutrition you're eating during the race. You see what you're wearing, you see what shoes you have on, but what you're eating, unless you're talking about it a lot, it's often hard to see. So, I think that's a baseline. And then, yeah, we talked about Costco. Unfortunately, they don't sponsor athletes, but there's a couple of lifestyle brands that would be very fun to be involved with. And I've talked a lot about pancakes, and I cook a lot of Kodiak cakes, and, I'm currently talking to somebody on their marketing team, but haven't heard back from them in a week or two. So I'm hoping to get something there, and that just came out of a natural love for a product, and from that, I kind of shared that in a very organic, natural way on my channel, and folks very quickly caught on. And I think those are the strongest sponsorship opportunities, is when you love something that you talk about it without any sort of acknowledgement, credit, financial incentive, and it grows from there. So finding brands that I love already that would be interested in working with me would be great. But again, like I said, the most important thing, and this is hard to find, is finding those brands that really want to promote their athletes and have them in their commercials, have them in their advertisements, and be a part of the brand, and also want to hear our feedback and change the product based on what we tell them.
Mm. Do you think this sport is growing? Like, where do you think this sport is going?
It's certainly growing. The biggest issue is that a lot of the races are capped. Western States, kind of first and foremost. The size of the field can't grow for very specific reasons around the parks restricting their ability to expand the field. And as such, the interest is going to continue to go up, but the supply is always going to be in that 400, 450 range, and that's never going to change. Mm. So,
and how many people start at, for example, the New York Marathon? There are 20,000, right?
I think closer to 40.
40,000.
Yeah.
All right.
And so, like, UTMB is going to be an experience for me, because I know that's several thousand runners, and that's crazy because it's a 100-mile race, but so I think the hard thing is that because the field sizes are capped for most of these races and because the interest is so high that we're seeing just this huge expansion of races. And as a result, it kind of waters down the competition because there's, as an elite athlete, there's so many options to choose from. It's really hard to find races where all of the best names are going to be. And part of the problem is, part of the problem is that people have different areas of expertise. It's very hard to find somebody who's amazing at a 50K and also can excel at a mountain 100 miler. And there's a couple of examples I can think of, but I mean, really, you know, I don't think Killian today could compete with Jim on Western States or a road flat race, but I also see that Killian is still incredibly dominant at mountain races, and I'd be curious to see what Jim could do at a Zagama or if he comes back to UTMB at some point. But
yeah, and both Killian or Jim, they were not at the World Championships.
Right. And it's sad to me that something as big as what should be as big as a World Championship or even in the U.S., our national championships are completely undervalued and just like nobody really credits them to being any sort of races of consequence. We end up not always fielding the best teams. America just doesn't seem to care about the race, and whether it's incentives, the timing of the races, the distance and the technicality of it, I don't know what it is, but you just don't always see the best fields show up to these races, and that's incredibly disappointing. Like, a world championship should be the biggest deal in our sport, and I wish. And, you know, Solomon is trying it with their Golden Trail series, but even the Ultra Trail World Tour series, there's too many races.
Yeah.
And it also, unfortunately, they pick really hard places to get to. Like, Canary Islands are not easy for Americans to get to. And South Africa, you know, I ran Cape Town, Ultra Trail Cape Town last year, and that was a pretty big pain to get to. Australia is not easy. And I don't know how you change it so that you make it easier for athletes to get to these places, but it would be amazing if there were three or four races a year where every athlete who is ranked in the top 25 in the world would show up. And I think that would really help our sport, because right now, you know, you win a race, that's second tier, like, you know, UTMB, Western States, a couple of these other big races in Europe. Like, if you win that, that's a big deal. But the second tier, they might have a decent name to the race and it might have an ultra trail tag to it, but depending on the year, a field may or may not show up. It might not be a strong field. And so winning it isn't necessarily as big of an accomplishment as it might have been in previous years when the fields were stronger.
What race do you think is the most prestigious right now? So where can we crown the best ultra mountain trail runner in the world?
Well, I'm incredibly biased because I'm in the U.S. and because I have a preference for runnable terrain, and very runnable courses. And so I feel like Western States is the best example there. From everything I see, UTMB seems to have the most, the best field of international runners. I mean, Western States just doesn't attract the same international competition. It's really an American championship.
Yeah.
So I feel like UTMB is probably our best example, but it's even that is tough because one, it's a 100-mile distance, which not everyone does. And it kind of is way more on the climbing side and mountainous side to the Western States spectrum of it. And so it definitely caters to a very different athlete. So I don't think we found the perfect race that everyone would be happy with and would kind of be an equal playing ground for everyone. But I feel like it needs to be somewhere, you know, I feel like 100K is probably a great distance on a course that is maybe not quite as mountainous as UTMB, but perhaps a little bit more technical than a Western States, somewhere in the middle there. So I'm thinking 100K with 12 to 15,000 feet of climbing.
Yeah.
And Europe is probably the right place for it just because I feel like Americans are willing to travel there, and there's so many opportunity. There's so many different athletes in Europe that having it hosted in Europe, especially because the fan base seems stronger there, would be the right call.
Do you think it's going to become an Olympic sport?
Based on the trends that we're seeing in the Diamond League, with them kind of cutting back on the 5K and 10K, I have a very hard time believing that they're going to be able to draw the attention of an audience for longer distances. I think a 100K road race would be very interesting, but I mean, even that Hoka event that happened a couple of weeks ago was, you know, it's pretty hard to watch runners for 6 hours in a row doing the same thing. And
yeah, we watched Tour de France for 2 weeks. So
that's a good point. You know, I think there's a lot more tactics at play in the Tour. I would be surprised if 100K was as similarly tactical, where you have this advantage being in the peloton versus kind of going out early, and you know, the excitement of the final lap of a 10K. Even I would be surprised if 100K played out similarly. So I don't know what we'd have to do to make it more interesting and exciting. I would obviously watch, but there has to be a way to make it more mainstream and interesting for others. The other cool thing about the Tour is the scenery and where they go through, and they can cover a lot more distance than you could in a road race. So
have you seen the coverage they do of Zagama?
I've not.
No,
a little bit.
It's pretty
actually.
Cool.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very,
and that is amazing. Again, a lot of it has to do with just the amazing shots they have of the mountains. The terrain that they're running on is kind of incredible for an American to see. Like, those ridges that they're running on just seem ridiculous. And then the crowds at the top of some of the climbs are pretty spectacular as well. But, you know, if I had my preference, I'd rather see a 15-minute highlight of that race than the entire thing play out.
Yeah. And that's what they do after a sky race. They do like this 10-minute reel from the race, or just the epic ridge running and the Via Ferrata climbs. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would definitely be behind a ultra running in the Olympics, but I'm just uncertain of if it's about making money and engaging an audience and capturing an audience. I don't know if it works perfectly.
Yeah, I think it's, if it became a part of the Olympics, it would probably get the same reactions as snowboarding got. You remember that?
I don't know. I feel like there's a pretty engaged audience in that, and a lot more people are willing to tune in. And, you know, a name like White, I'm blanking on his name.
Sean
White. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of big personalities in that sport, and I'm not sure they exist in our world too.
Chris Mocco.
I certainly have strong opinions about, like, when snowboarding was introduced. I don't know if skateboarding in the Olympics?
No, I don't think so. But climbing is becoming part of the Olympics. And that's also controversial, because it's a very similar sport to, I mean, it's very, we can compare it to ultra running, because it's, they use the mountains as their playing ground.
Yeah.
And
if I had my preference, Winter Olympics would just be cross country skiing the whole time. You guys tend to do pretty well at that too. So
yeah, we're pretty good at that. So I just saw you're engaged in ITRA now, right?
Yes.
What's your role in ITRA?
Yeah, so I was just elected as the runner representative for North America. And I think there's a Canadian representative as well, so it's only a portion of North America.
Okay.
And still a little uncertain of what exact influence I'm going to have, but for what I feel like I'm going to be doing, at least in the interim, is being a sounding board and representing the opinions of American trail running at an international level. And ITRA, you know, is responsible from everything from the global ranking system that does make a big difference when it comes to some of these races, but they also provide insurance. They also do drug testing through the courts program. So they're touching on a lot of different things right now. And I think it's an exciting time where we're still very young in the sport, and the amount of influence you can have on the direction of the sport is pretty high right now. I'm curious to see how we'll be able to impact that. I think a lot of the elite athletes are interested in stricter drug testing. I don't know if that's representative of the broader trail running community, because, you know, somebody finishing 100th probably doesn't care that much about whether the person beating them is clean or not. So I think there's an interesting balance where we're trying to balance the needs of the elite athletes, but also the needs of the masses as well.
Have you ever gotten drug tested?
I was tested once through the courts program.
Did they come home to you, or was it part of a race?
It was prior to a race.
Okay.
I just had to go to a nearby hospital to get some blood work.
Okay.
But just to the, you know, when I think drug testing, I think you have to wait in the bathroom while somebody watches you after the race, or somebody randomly shows up at your house and ask for a urine sample, and we're not quite at that level. Having biological passports, so you can see how biological levels change over time. Unfortunately, I'm not quite as well read as I should be on what exists and what trail running is doing today. But I think there's certainly a gap, and a lot of it just has to do with funding and having the money to do it.
Yeah. That's what they did at the World Champs last weekend. They had each country come into to a room with an ITRA representative, and the two best ranked based on the ITRA points had to give some blood samples. And it was not a drug test. It was more labeled as a health program. So they take some blood samples. They check your health to see if you're healthy enough to actually complete an ultra race. And I guess they then store that somewhere, like your values, and they can compare it to next year's. But I'm not sure if they actually test for drugs. But we have a long way to go, I think.
Well, speaking of world champs, why don't we end with with your recap of the race? I unfortunately was out on my long run, so I don't know much of what went down. All I know is the Americans did not have great days. But
yeah, I passed some Americans. I think I passed all of them, actually. I had fun. I finished 39th, I was the best Scandinavian. I'm happy with that, and it was kind of a weird setup because this sport is also, I think it would be a fun race to watch from on TV if you could do the live coverage well, because I ended up running behind a Dutch guy down a long hill, and Dutch guys are not known for being very good in the mountains, and the trail was super narrow and I couldn't pass him, so I had to let the fast ones go, unfortunately. I was about 10 minutes off top 20.
Okay.
It was a brutal start. Brutal start. First 5Ks were pretty flat. Then I don't know how many feet. It was 2,200 meters. I can do a quick Google search.
It's probably about 7,000 feet.
Yeah, and 44K, so just over a marathon. And I finished in 4 hours and 1 second.
Oh.
Yeah. So next time, I want to be top 10. That's my goal.
What are you going to do differently? What do you think it's going to take?
I think I would be capable of doing top 10 this year if I played my cards right. I think so. But differently if I maybe more speed work and more specific work towards this kind of race, you know, like, because I did Transfer Vulcania 4 weeks ago, and so maybe more proper training for this specific race and a proper taper and not just recover, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You do
how often do you get to race against the Swedish boys? I feel like they've won over the hearts of the Americans because they've come over here a couple of times.
Yeah, not very often. Well, I race André Jonsson. I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a very good sky runner, and I race him pretty much every sky race. The other guys, I know Elof Olsson came to Western States last year or the year before.
Okay.
He came, I think he finished 15th in Comrades last weekend.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. A couple of times a year. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I'd like to be out for, Ultravasen next year.
Oh yeah. I heard Jim Walmsley is coming.
But I hear too. Year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a fast race.
Awesome.
A fast race. Okay.
Cool, Chris, what's next for you then?
My next race is Buff Epic Trail. It's in a valley called Val de Boy in Spain. It's close to the Andorra Mountains. So I'm doing the sky running World Series this year. So that's my main focus.
Awesome. Well, as a naive American, if I had to pick three races to do in Europe, not including UTMB, because I've heard of UTMB.
Yeah.
What do you think I should be doing for 2020?
If you like fast runnable races, or do you want to have some fun in the mountains? Get out of your comfort zone.
A little bit of both.
Okay, so you should do...
Runnable. I prefer runnable.
You should do Tromsø Sky Race just to for the experience. So run on some ridges and... get out of your comfort zone, and then maybe to get a fast runnable race at Transvulcania. You haven't done that, right? No. You should do that. It's pretty runnable. 75.
Really?
Yeah, it's 75Ks. Okay. I think it's your distance. You could do good there. It's very warm though. Super warm. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, I'm sorry, there's a helicopter outside. maybe Ultravasan. Yeah. Tromsø Sky Race, Transvulcania, Ultravasan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try to make it happen.
Yeah. Hey.
My dream would be to get to go race internationally once a month.
All right.
All 12 months, but it's probably not realistic from a travel budget, but also that's a lot of racing, but I feel like I could get pretty excited about exploring some new areas and getting outside of the US.
If you got sponsored by an airline.
Airline and hotel, that'd be a good combo.
That's an ideal setup.
Yeah.
One question.
Yes.
Do you have any training secrets? Like, do you have any key workouts that only Chris Mako does that you believe in and you think are unique?
I don't know how unique this is, and probably because most people are probably afraid to share on Strava when they do this, but something that I try to incorporate a decent amount is treadmill hiking.
All right.
And unfortunately, my treadmill only goes to 15%, and I really think it needs to be at a steeper incline than that. But when I've gone out and done a pretty hard morning, anywhere from 2 to 3 hours out on the trails, I usually look at the afternoon and I'm like, if I want to go for a run, I'll do like a 4 or 5 mile flat run. And it's kind of junk miles. I do it slowly and it makes me pretty tired. But the nice thing about hopping on a treadmill, you know, I put it at max incline, usually it's 15%, and go at a comfortable pace that isn't killing me, but it's also, I'm not just strolling. Like, I feel like I'm getting in work, but it's incredibly low impact. and you certainly miss out on descending afterwards, which I think descending is equally important, but you're getting in a bunch of quality incline miles, and it kind of sneaks up on me because you can't track elevation very well on treadmill.
Mm.
So I might look at my week and it says, you know, I did 3,000 meters of climbing, but in reality, there might be another 1,000 meters that I did on treadmill hiking. So it starts adding up, and I'm not sure if it's because of the treadmill or it's because I have long legs or there's some other reason, but I do find that when I'm in a race and I need to power hike, that I do it at a pretty efficient and fast clip. And in this latter stages of a race, if you're able to do that, that makes a massive difference. And I think a lot of people underestimate that. And because in your training, you don't need to rely on a hike that much because you're not typically going out for that long of a period of time, those muscles aren't activated as much as they should be. And, you know, a lot of the time I know when I'm haven't been hiking enough, because after a run with a lot of vert where I do hike, my abs are sore, my back is sore, and you especially feel that during the race. And so forcing myself to do a little bit of that, I think, makes a difference.
So you still step on the treadmill, even though it's, you can run outside.
Yeah. And part of it's efficient with my time as well.
Okay. Okay.
About a,
do you have it at, in your apartment or?
Yeah, there's a gym downstairs
okay.
in my apartment complex versus having to drive. It's almost 15 minutes during the latter part of the day to get to the mountain and
okay.
go there. I'd prefer that if I lived right, you know, it was right out my door, but most people don't have that access. And I'm also eliminating all that downhill, so all of my time is spent climbing. So I think that's all pretty valuable.
All right. Yeah, because I saw you did a 50K treadmill run the other day. On your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
How normal is that?
It's not very normal. It was snowing and kind of miserable outside, and it was late May, so it's not very typical.
Okay.
And my motivation wasn't super high. I had missed my long run over the weekend, and I needed to get in some miles, and just kind of found myself in a rhythm, and suddenly the time went by pretty quickly, and soon enough, it became, you know, goal of hitting 20 miles, became running a marathon, became running a 50K. And you don't have many of those special days where you feel that good for that long, but it was a good one. You know, if I had a choice, I probably would rather run 10 less miles, but climb 5,000 feet in the mountains. I think that's more beneficial to your training, but
yeah.
You got to take the hand that's dealt you and do the best with what you got.
And when do you start your taper for Western States now? When can you start relaxing?
Yeah, I don't really believe in much of a taper. I think as soon as you relax and you take your foot off the pedal, you can start checking out mentally. Like every run yep. for me during a taper and the last 10 days of training always feels so hard and difficult because in my head, I'm assuming it's going to be super easy. I'm going to feel super good. And that's not always the case. But the accumulation of a bunch of easy days makes race day feel great. So I'm definitely going to cut back a little bit on the intensity. And there certainly won't be as much pressure on my long runs to really get out and do big days. But I don't think I'm going to, like, I've done tapers where I've gone less than 20 miles in the 5 days leading up to the race. I don't think I'm going to do that. Probably do a little bit higher volume and trust that I'll feel good on race day.
Mm. All right. And it's early in Boulder right now. Is it? You're eating breakfast?
It's second breakfast. I've already had first breakfast. So it's 11:15 here.
Okay. Have you worked out today?
Yeah, I snuck in. I needed to get in the tempo run. And my buddy who I've been meeting is unfortunately injured right now. So I knew I wasn't going to be motivated to meet at our normal spot. So I just hopped on the treadmill and did a little bit of a fartlek, a little bit of a short tempo. And hopefully this afternoon I'm going to get out on the mountains and ideally kind of put in a moderate effort on the mountains. So it's kind of like a double workout day where a little bit of effort in the morning, a little bit in the evening on tired legs. And we'll see how that goes. But priority is going to be getting some coffee in me after this and getting in a couple hours of work, and then hopefully my legs will come back to me and I'll feel good to get on the mountain.
All right. I'm going to let you go and do your work.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming on the show. And for
thank you. Thank you all you listeners for bearing with an English speaking guest for the first time. So hopefully there's enough English speaking members of your audience to get through this episode.
Oh yeah, now there will be. All right, thanks, awesome, man. Thanks, man.